Lions Collective on a Wednesday. We have three today. Colton Pouncey to my right, I guess, on your viewing screen from The Athletic, Colton Pouncey. And on my left, Justin Rogers, Detroit Football Network. I'm Jeff Iafredi from Crunch Time Sports. And today we have more Detroit Lions topics to go through. One of them being the biggest one, obviously, the offensive coordinator search, which continues. Mike McDaniel was in Detroit, yesterday, I believe, to interview. Mike Kafka today. So they're kind of going through their interviews as of right now. I believe I was talking to you earlier, Justin. I think there's only, four guys? Now David Blau's out. So four guys that have confirmed that have been interviewed. Mike McDaniel, Mike Kafka, Jake Peets, and T. Martin, I think, would be the other
one.
That
is correct.
Ravens quarterback coach. Obviously, there's a lot of openings, which, Aaron Rodgers kind of spoke about how, the NFL is kind of changing. It seems with, whatever it is, social media, whatever you want to blame, about half the league needs either a new head coach or a new offensive coordinator. And I guess new head coach means new offensive coordinator. So half the league is looking for offensive coordinators. So that means Mike McDaniel's going on basically a world tour at this point. I mean, he's like the hot commodity of offensive coordinators. What has kind of been your guys's just thoughts on the available candidates, the current search, the competitiveness of the market, and all of that combined?
It's apparently all the owners now are Gen Z, no attention span. You get 2.5 years and you're out.
iPad kids.
They're all scrolling their TikTok and just bouncing on their owner as well, making awesome highlight reels. It is interesting. Colton, was it you that I was going through the list of potential openings in the press box? Like, I can't remember if it was you or Will or Ben. I was, it's just kind of going through the teams and like how many openings are going to be. Probably not this, probably not this. And I think I settled on 5, maybe 6. And suddenly we got 9. And I don't, probably nobody saw Harbaugh or Tomlin coming. It's a little bit surprising on those fronts. You add in some of the expected offensive coordinator openings, Philadelphia being one of them, Greg Roman with the Chargers being another, maybe a couple unexpected. But yeah, you're potentially looking at 14 new offensive coordinators in this league. And so I remember talking to John Neal about, how long is this going to take? He's like, well, they got a 2-week head start than they had, last time. But it's like, I'm sorry, all these head coach openings have to sort themselves out first before the Lions are able to land their guy. And I think it's really important that before we get going too deep in this discussion, Lions aren't announcing their candidates. They're not announcing their interviews. And so, we're a little left in the dark. All my years in this industry, I've had the hardest time breaking through with coaching agents. It's just a world that's tough to crack. And so we're left to kind of lean on the national reports because that's where that stuff kind of trickles down from. But just because we know of 4/5, if you want to include the interest in Blau, doesn't mean there haven't been more, including, potential internal candidates, whether that's Fraley, Montgomery, whatever.
Yeah. And, one thing I would say to start is it's going to be hard to say considering how things kind of ended last year, but Ben Johnson giving the Lions 3 years as OC is kind of a big deal in today's landscape. I think it's probably worth mentioning that. Did not have to stay as long as he did, but he did. I know things didn't end the way people wanted to, but 3 years as an OC is kind of unheard of in the NFL these days, unless you're a dude that's been around and that's all you want to do at this point in your career. But yeah, man, I think, when you're looking at some of the candidates, they're going to trickle out slowly. There's always going to be sort of a delayed process, especially when you're looking for an OC and there's all these head coaching jobs that need to kind of let the dust settle for. But in terms of where they're at, the names that are out there are pretty intriguing to me. Obviously, Mike McDaniel's a top name out there. I think he did his interview yesterday. I saw a picture of him at the airport. Someone took a selfie with him, which is always funny when those pictures trickle out. But in terms of the names that are out there, I've kind of gone through them a little bit. I'm going to have a story out later this week about some of the names. But McDaniel, obviously, we know who he is. Kafka, I think he did a really nice job auditioning for that OC job, if that's what he was doing when they played in week 12. But I think his experience, West Coast offense, working with Andy Reid, some of the creativity shown in that game with Jameis, and I think Derek Barnes still having nightmares about that play. Go on the list, Jake Peets, Seattle Seahawks passing coordinator. I think he's done a good job, different backgrounds, working for different coaches, kind of an impressive resume there. And then T. Martin, former quarterback, you know, spent the last couple seasons with the Ravens, quarterbacks coach role, working with Lamar Jackson. I think they're pretty interesting names, but, you know, I'm curious if they want that sort of experienced name, you know, veteran play caller, where they go with a young guy that hasn't done before that can work with Dan and try to get the offense right. But in terms of where they're at, it's probably going to move a little bit slower than people want just because there's so many, as Justin mentioned, jobs that are open and need to kind of let that settle first. But I do like some of the names that are out there.
Now, before we continue, I want to bring on our good friend, Mr. Will Birchfield.
Oh.
He has arrived. Let's bring him in here. Hold on. Let me get this all
situated. Oh, what up, boys?
Hey, hey, look at that.
How are we doing, fellas? Dude, it took me an hour and a half to get from downtown to Southfield to the studio here. And I was going to stop on my way to use my phone to dial in, but I'm part of that Verizon outage, apparently. So I'm just getting boned from all sides, but I did make it. I did make it in time, 6:05, so I can weigh in here. What are we talking about? A little OC, a
little OC action. Yeah, yeah.
I love it. I love it. Were you guys chopping it up about Ben Johnson a minute ago? Or did I catch the tail end of that?
Colton was saying how kind he was to hang around for 3 years when you don't have to in this biz.
Yeah. No, I hear that. Me could have left after 2022, right, to Carolina, and then 2023 to Washington, and you know, he probably stayed 2 years longer than he needed to. I think the reason that people bear such resentment to Ben Johnson,
it's where he went,
exclusively because of the way that Commanders game went in the playoffs. Even if they had lost that game 50-45 and the offense hadn't committed five turnovers and one of them wasn't a pass by J-Mo, I think people would have been more or less okay with the way things ended. Obviously, they still would have been pissed that he ended up in Chicago, but he left on really unfortunate terms and in pretty ugly circumstances. And it's very easy to look back at that game. I don't buy this, but it's very easy to look back at this game and say that he had half a mind on his next job because of the way he called it, sort of haphazardly, you might even say recklessly. I think the way that his tenure ended in that game specifically, maybe even more than the Bears. No, not more than going to Chicago, but the way that game ended specifically colors a lot of how the fan base views him and the way he left.
You think he called that J-Mo pass because he was just out the door? He's like,
You'd be surprised how many people believe that, though. That's my point. That shaped perceptions.
Your job is to point out that is ridiculous. Not to,
of course it's ridiculous, but if you take not just that play, that here we go relitigating the Commanders game a year later, like the empty set
I've already
on third and one when they were about to go up two scores, you can apply the reasoning that he called the game again, I'll say haphazardly, and I think that influences the way people feel about Ben Johnson because that was the last impression he made on this team and the fan base.
Yeah, I feel that. And I'm on your side with that. It's just 31 points with five turnovers is pretty hard to do. I feel like he still did a good job, all things considered. But I understand that's how people are going to take Twitter. I'm not saying you're saying that. That's how Twitter is going to react to things like that. But he's killing Chicago, and the Lions are obviously in the market for another OC. So here we go again.
Shout out Andy Isaac. I'm not saying it. People are saying it.
Yeah, I agree with Robo in the chat. So I sometimes don't believe Twitter's a real place. I it's hard. A lot of the things I hear on Twitter from random people, I you never hear it in real life. It's the most random place. It's very, and I'm addicted to it. So I still go on Twitter. But I think what we were also talking about, Will, is the Mike McDaniel stuff because, you know, he interviewed with the Lions. Someone caught him walking.
I saw that.
Onto his dude, the guy is tripped out. I mean, this guy's flying spirit. I mean, with like a $5,000 fit. I don't know what's going on with Mike McDaniel. But yeah, he was catching a flight to Tennessee, to Nashville, take his I guess would be the next place he'd go to, I believe. So his interview wrapped up, but we were talking about how half the league roughly is going to be looking for an OC. So it's a very competitive market. The Lions have going for him, though, and this is great news, is your job is a very attractive job compared to all the other ones. It's up there. I think we can agree like the Eagles would be up there. I don't know about we'll see what happens with AJ Brown. Maybe the locker room isn't as attractive, but the job is attractive. The Lions is up there. So that's what they have going for them, Will, but we were just talking about the competitiveness of the market with those that are available.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason that McDaniel only scheduled the one OC interview in addition to the four head coaching jobs, and it sounds like now the Eagles will likely make that two OC interviews. It sounds like they have he and Brian Daboll as their top two candidates to fill their OC role, but I would agree those are the two most attractive OC jobs on the market. I still think that that Eagles job or that Eagles O-line is one of the better units in the league and better than the one the Lions have, certainly. And if I'm an potential OC, I'm looking at quarterback first and then O-line second. And you could argue that those two add up to more than what the Lions have here. But I mean, I said it last week, I'll say it again. I think the idea of Mike McDaniel stepping into this cast of weapons around this quarterback harkens back in a lot of ways to the offense that he was operating in 2022 and 2023 in Miami when they were piling up points and hanging 30 and 40 on what felt like a weekly basis.
No, I think it's a really good point, Will. And I keep going back to it. Like McDaniel's first thing he might be checking is 40 times, right? Like that's what he's all about. And I think Gibbs and A-Chain are very similar backs. A-Chain doesn't get the respect just because the Dolphins aren't as good. So some of his highlight plays get pushed aside, but obviously J-Mo is kind of somewhere between Waddle and Hill, probably closer to Waddle. But you add on to that and Amon-Ra St. Brown, you add on to that a Sam Laporta, and it's like I go back to John Morton's comment the first time we talked about the combine, like every day is Christmas, right?
Kid in the candy store.
Yeah. I mean, like Christmas. That is like it's so easy to imagine and envision like a scheme, no matter what the scheme is, working with these assets. And obviously, like they've got some stuff to sort out with the offensive line, but a good coordinator can kind of operate around an average offensive line. And look, the Lions offensive line isn't the worst in the league. I know it felt that way going from best to middle of the pack, but they're still middle of the pack, and they have an all-pro offensive tackle. They have a very good left tackle if he sticks around, decent guards. Like there's a lot to work with. And so like I just obviously if McDaniel gets offered a head coaching job, he should take it. The pay, the prestige, the control is all there. But like if it's OC, like it's gotta be Philadelphia and Detroit. And Philadelphia might frighten me a little bit just because they've gone through five OCs in five years. And maybe McDaniel doesn't need more than that. Maybe 1 year of good OC is gets him bumped up to head coach like Kellen Moore, you know, did over there. But I mean, Detroit is a very, very appealing job just with the personnel. And, you know they're going to invest in that line and kind of, you know, start fixing some of those holes this offseason.
Yeah, I do wonder how the perception of the line changes if Decker retires. I mean, if you go into next season with really Penei Sewell as your only proven offensive lineman, that's a pretty far cry from even a top 10 unit. I think personally that Tate Rowledge is going to grow into a pro bowler at guard, assuming they keep him there. That's where he wants to play. I think that's where they should play him. But this unit as a whole could look pretty different pending Decker's decision and then pending how they attack the center position, which brings me to, I think it's noteworthy that while the Dolphins offensive line might not have had this fierce, mean mugging perception, they did this year and last year develop a completely unknown center into a second team All-Pro. And I think that should matter to the Lions. That's applicable here. Aaron Brewer is a name that honestly I've only discovered because I've been kind of canvassing the league for potential centers to plug into here. And he was an undrafted player, I think out of Texas State, who spent his first 3 years, I want to say with Tennessee, and then signed a deal with Miami last year, and they plugged him in at center and they found the right scheme for him anyways. And they have blossomed him into a top tier center in the league. And so I'm not saying that McDaniel will potentially bring Brewer with him. Brewer's under contract through next season still. But, you know, if the Dolphins end up in sell mode, A, maybe that is someone you call on. But B, maybe it foretells that, you know, Mike McDaniel's scheme might be conducive to developing unheralded players at center. And that obviously would mean a lot to this team in particular.
What I like about McDaniel is that he is a coach that can get the most out of his talent and squeezes every last ounce out of it. you know, if you look at what he did in Miami, as you just mentioned, he really took whatever was at his disposal and made it work, whether it was Mostert rush, getting him to rush for 18 touchdowns. That was kind of insane. That was sort of like Jamal Williams and Ben Johnson a couple of years ago. Not to discredit what those guys have done, but he really seems like a coach that can elevate the talent. And obviously, Detroit is not light on talent out here, so I think he'd be able to make it work. But, you know, I really like his coaching schemes. Like, the thing that fascinates me about McDaniel is, you know, I don't know if you guys listened to a Play Callers podcast that my colleague at The Athletic, Jordan Rodriguez, kind of set up a couple years ago, talking to the Shanahan McVay guys. McDaniel was a guy that really just kind of latched himself into the run game aspect, because a lot of those other coaches like LaFleur and McVay were kind of focused on the passing game. McDaniel was a coach that realized that, hey, if I want to get Shanahan's attention, I need to kind of find a niche here with so many talented offensive minds. And so he kind of focused on the run game. When Shanahan left to go to Cleveland, he could only take one coach with him from that Washington staff, and he chose McDaniel. And that's sort of the path that he went on, just being able to tailor different run games to the personnel, the players at his disposal. So that's what really fascinates me about him. I think that would be a perfect marriage with Dan Campbell. And then off the field, you talk about, you know, I think McDaniel will be able to land another head coaching job with or without Dan Campbell. But if he ends up coming to Detroit, whether it's for a year or maybe two, you can squeeze that out of him. Just learning from a leader like Dan for a year or two. We saw what it did for Ben Johnson. That's one of the reasons he stayed. I think what you're seeing in Chicago is sort of not a direct result, but I'm sure there's some influence from his time in Detroit working with Dan and learning from him and watching him run a team. I think McDaniel could really benefit from something like that. So when you're talking about some of the OC openings that are opening up here soon, whether it's Philly, the Chargers, Tampa, obviously, I think he's going to interview for that one as well.
See you, Jeff.
I'm curious where he goes ultimately, but I don't know where Jeff went.
Speaking of where he went. Jeff bounced.
I'm curious where he ends up, but I really think Detroit is probably the top option on that list, and maybe that's up for debate, but there's a lot to like about that job for sure.
I love this that we can't fix this. I don't know where Jeff went. I don't know if he can get back in. Whatever. I think we're still live.
we're still humming.
Colton, I think your point's great, and I it was one I was looking to make as well. Like, what were the criticisms of McDaniel in Miami, right? Like, he wasn't maybe the strongest leader. He lost grasp of the locker room. The culture kind of fell off there, and that is Campbell's superpower, right? Is holding this thing together and keeping everybody rowing in the same direction. And I do think, you know, you watch Ben Johnson's post-game locker rooms, like how much overlap language-wise that there is. Like, Johnson needed Campbell. He really did. Like, he needed to kind of figure out how to tone down his demanding style, his tone, to, you know, love guys up at the right time that they needed to be loved up. And, you know, he was self-aware enough to recognize that. And I think that extra year that he stayed here was really focused on rounding his personnel. Oh my gosh, we're losing everybody, Colton. It's just
like flies.
Me and you now.
I'm back. Let's go.
it was about rounding out his personality and his people skills that made him a better coach. I like that we got a three box now. This is great. There's five people in the studio chat. I don't know who's popping in anymore. This is crazy.
You guys still have me?
We're back. Sorry about
that. Got you.
yeah, that's great. Love that. So where do we leave off at? I mean, what's going on here? Okay, I was the computer shut off. I'm all over the place.
We're talking about Ben Johnson again.
Okay.
I'll pick up where you left off, Justin. I think the other thing that's noteworthy, and we touched on this a little bit last week about Ben's background, is how many different positions he coached on the offensive ball on his way up to OC. And I think that matters as you start to interview potential offensive coordinator candidates. You thought I was going to make a BC reference there, didn't you? You thought that I was going to start with how many different places he coached at, including Boston College to begin with. But one thing about Kafka, for example, that I think is, you know, slightly concerning if you're viewing this through the Lions lens, is that he didn't have any background in the run game before he became an OC. Like, he was strictly a receivers or quarterbacks coach, and then he became OC. I don't even know if you guys can hear me still. You got me?
Yeah, we got you. You're
good. Okay, good, good, cool. Whereas Ben, he was a tight ends coach at every single one of his stops before he came to Detroit, and then including Detroit. And when you're a tight ends coach, you have so much exposure to run concepts and run schemes. And I think if you asked him, he would probably credit that experience as much as any for the way he has developed these like layered, complex rushing attacks here and in Chicago. And so I don't know. I think that the Lions should possibly take that into account as they're considering offensive coordinators. Like, that was probably an issue. In fact, I'm willing to say that was an issue for John Morton this year. He was strictly a pass game expert, to the point that, you know, he would kind of refer to the passing game as, you know, his baby, his area of expertise. And it was really on Hank Fraley and others to coordinate the run game each week. I think the Lions would benefit from someone obviously like Ben Johnson, who has a more diverse background when it comes to the offensive side of the ball.
I think you're getting into maybe it's like any job, right? Like, you put these credentials out that you want, and then in reality, like, you're asking for pie in the sky. And as we're kind of reviewing these candidates, you find that there just aren't a lot of diverse backgrounds in terms of run game, pass game. Obviously, McDaniel is one of them, but I think more and more the path to OC is quarterback, pass game coordinator, like, just because that's where the game has been at. And I recognize, like, now it's coming back to more of the run game, but there's just not a lot of offensive line coach, tight end coach opportunities out there. I know I pointed out one in my 15 coaches to watch, and that was the run game coordinator and tight ends coach in San Francisco, Brian Fleury, because I'm of the belief that anybody connected to Kyle Shanahan is worth talking to. But I'm big on Kafka. Like, if McDaniels gets a head coaching job, or he decides that Philadelphia is a better fit for him as an OC, like, I'm really glad that the Lions did talk to Kafka. I think we undervalue Andy Reid at this point. Like, we got so numb to his excellence, and he's 67 years old now, and he's been kind of replaced by these young, fresh coordinators or coaches in McVay and Shanahan. But like, Andy Reid is long been kind of on the forefront of offensive evolution. And what I really like about Kafka and that Andy Reid connection is it's a West Coast offense, and it's an evolved West Coast offense. And what people don't recognize, Ben's offense here is this combination of several different schemes, Mike Martz's digit system, and Bill Lazor was involved, but at the heart of it is still the West Coast offense. And Jared Goff is very much a West Coast quarterback in terms of timing and precision and horizontal routes and crossers and digs and out routes. Like, and what I like about Kafka and what I appreciate about Kafka is coming from Andy Reid. Like, Andy Reid definitely has this history of ignoring the run game or making it secondary. Well, Brian Daboll didn't. And I think Kafka evolved to match what his head coach needed. And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I believe the Giants, even though they were kind of garbage this year, were a very good running team, right? Like, he learned how to embrace the run, and he learned how to listen and evolve to ideas that weren't his own, which I think is always a great trait of human beings, let alone coaches, right? And so if that is your fallback plan, like, that's a pretty good fallback plan. We've talked about it already. Like, the audition tape that he had in the Giants Lions game was a love letter to Dan Campbell, unintentionally, right? Yeah. 39 runs, some deep shots, some fourth down tries, some trick plays. Like, it was fun to watch for a team that had no business competing, missing its top running back, top receiver, quarterback. They took it to the Lions, and I have to imagine, like, that alone got his foot in the door with Dan Campbell, got him in the room to have the opportunity to potentially be coordinator of this team.
Yeah. I mean, I think Kafka definitely showed a commitment to the run this year. And I think that matters as much as anything when you're considering candidates for OC here. The run numbers for the Giants are probably a little bit deceiving. Like, they piled up a bunch of yards because they also piled up a bunch of attempts. Again, that matters. I think they were second in the league in rushing attempts, and you wonder how many of those were Jackson Dart influenced. So they ended up, I believe, fourth or fifth in total yards. They were 18th, I think, in yards per attempt. So it wasn't the most efficient rushing attack, but it was certainly a committed rushing attack, and that definitely would hold some weight with Campbell. I think the other thing I'll say in favor of Kafka is that he had an interesting path with the Giants, where he was OC and play caller, and then he was stripped of play calling duties but remained OC, and then, unlike John Morton, was kept aboard and reinstalled as play caller the next season. And if you look at the years that he was calling plays for the offense versus those that he wasn't, the Giants offense was never great, but it was significantly better when he was calling plays. And, you know, I go back to the 2022 season when they made that miraculous run to the divisional round of the playoffs. He took over an offense that was one of the worst in the league the year prior. And it, you know, it was about league average that year. And it again had a top five rushing attack, which you can probably attribute a fair amount of to Daniel Jones and the threat of his legs. And then the next year is when Jones, I believe, tore his ACL. So he missed most of the year. The offense sunk to bottom five when, like, Tyrod Taylor was QB1. And the next year is when Brian Daboll, probably against his better judgment, stepped in and took over play calling duties himself. And the offense, with the healthy Daniel Jones, sunk back to, like, bottom three in the NFL. And it's telling to me that after that season, when Kafka was OC but not play caller and the offense was putrid, he still got head coaching interviews that offseason. He got two head coaching interviews that offseason. I think people around the league realized that he was a better mind than that Giants offense called by Brian Daboll reflected. And then he goes back to play calling duties this year. And again, the offense, despite missing, as Justin said, its top receiver, its top running back, and introducing a rookie quarterback who got injured himself, was back to league average. And you look at the pieces that he was working with, and I'd say that's pretty darn impressive.
Yeah, to echo some of your points, Bertie, I reached out to a colleague at The Athletic, just trying to get some, like, insight on Kafka, and just mention a lot of things you did. And I'll read it. I won't name a name, but I'll read it. He said, so he came in here and was running Daboll's offense with some KSU influence from Kafka. That went well in 22, but then in 2023, that was an overall disaster, and Daboll yo-yoed play calling duties. Then he stripped play calling duties in 24. He gave play calling duties back to Kafka this season. Kafka continued to call plays when he was interim OC for 7 games. As you can tell, it's been a mess here. I think him existing in that turmoil shows that he's definitely a solid personality to have on staff. Definitely won't rock the boat. I don't think he'll reinvent the wheel offensively, but they had a decent scheme, and you saw the trick plays when they played the season. So to me, like, the personality aspect of that, I think, matters. Obviously, it was something that mattered to Campbell last year with Morton, a guy that he knows, a guy that he's coached with before. They're definitely taking more of an outside-the-box approach and, you know, I guess going more external with the search than they did last year. But when I hear that, I think that's probably what you need, because if Kafka's going to come in here and run a variation of Dan Campbell's offense, you need a guy that's going to be adaptable, flexible, willing to work with DC, unless it's more of an experienced guy like Mike McDaniel. I don't think Dan would let him run his own offense there. But if you're a guy like Kafka trying to still, you know, leave your mark in this league, I think you have to be able to work with a coach. And if that's what Dan wants, if he goes with that, you know, if he goes with Kafka for a role like this, I think his ability to adapt and be flexible, and if you can survive Brian Daboll, I think you will be just fine with Dan Campbell personality wise. So I do think that's an important thing to note out as we're kind of talking about some of these candidates.
I think Dan would let McDaniel run his own offense with the caveat of you need to run the ball more.
Sure.
Right. And maybe that just naturally happens. But something I want to emphasize here that I think is really important with the OC is I think they need somebody smart. And maybe that goes without saying, like, all OCs, like, at some level have a higher football IQ than anybody in this room, anybody in the chat. Like, it's not an easy world to coordinate an NFL offense, but, like, you need somebody smart enough to speak your quarterback's language. Because if your quarterback doesn't think you're as smart as him, it's just going to not work. And Jared Goff needs somebody to kind of push him to be his intellectual equal. I think that's why it worked so well with Ben Johnson and in some ways didn't work with John Morton. You know, I'm not calling John Morton dumb, but like he was a worker bee, right? He was more of a grinder, and that was his reputation. Nobody shied away from that, but like his work ethic trumped his raw genius, if you will. And I think you're looking for that super smart coordinator. And where did Mike McDaniel go to school? Yale. Smart. Yay. Where did Kafka go to school? Northwestern. Like, these are smart dudes that will push your quarterback and kind of challenge him to see the game differently, but also be able to like see the game through the same eyes. And I think Goff needs that and thrives in that environment. And so, you know, it's why I see both of those as really, really strong candidates.
Yeah, let's take a quick break. I want to tell you about our friends over at Sleeper, but before we do, you have to hear about them. We'll see you in 30 seconds.
Sleeper is the number one fantasy sports app. It pays to know sports. Pick more or less on top players. Your first pick is on us, so start winning now. Play in Texas, Georgia, Minnesota, and 27 more states. Pick anytime across all sports, pregame or live. Over 10 million players are already on Sleeper. Make your picks count. Score up to 1,000 times your cash. Join today. Get up to $100 credit using code HMA. Call your shot on Sleeper. Download now.
Sleeper, proud sponsor of Lions Collective. Use that code HMA. Get a $100 deposit matched up to $100. You got NFL playoffs this weekend. I know you guys are going to be watching Rams-Bears. Don't lie to me. I know you're going to be watching Matthew Stafford versus Ben Johnson. So get your picks in. It's very simple. Sleeper is one of the most popular, active, not only fantasy apps, but also gambling apps, which you can use with Sleeper Picks. You choose 2 to 8 of your favorite players pregame, live, or across different sports. Pick more or less than their predicted stats. And on Sleeper, you can get up to 1,000x payout. Share with your friends and get rewarded together. Shout out to Sleeper for sponsoring the show. I did want to get your guys' thoughts on the wild card weekend. I mean, I think for me, as a watching the playoffs, knowing that the Lions are at home, I try to take things away from the playoffs, or maybe things that are interesting or things that stand out to me. I think the biggest thing that I took away from the weekend is just reiterating the importance of coaching. I think it matters. And you're seeing it now with the Lions finding a new offensive coordinator. What did you guys kind of take away from the weekend for wild card weekend? And beside that, I mean, you could talk, we got Bears, Packers, the Bears coming up on top of that one, Matt LaFleur's job being in question for like 24 hours. Now he's staying, but what'd you guys think of the weekend for the playoffs?
I would say something that stood out, and like those games, a lot of those games were won in different ways, right? So you could have a lot of different takeaways, but I think it just reemphasizes the cliche that defense wins championships, right? Look at 4 of the top scoring defenses are still alive. 2 of them were 1 seeds. The Patriots completely shut down the Chargers. The Texans completely shut down the Steelers. And so it shows not just this focus on the offensive line that we keep coming back to over and over and over again, because it needs to be fixed in Detroit, but like there's also a need to get better defensively to be a playoff caliber defense. And as good as their defense was during the regular season, during the 2024 season, it let them down against Washington in many ways. I know turnovers played into that as well, but I know Lions fans want 2 dominant edge rushers, and it's not easy to find. You're welcome, Brad Holmes. You can just Venmo me that $5. like they've got the one, right? And Houston has this awesome setup with Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson that they paid out the nose for, right? Like they paid huge draft equity to trade up to get Will Anderson. They traded for Danielle Hunter, then gave him a contract that I think averages $35 million a year. But like, you can see why people want it. Like, it was just relentless pressure. And I don't know how you go about finding your Will Anderson to Aiden Hutchinson compliment. I don't know if you have enough draft equity to trade up to find that guy, but clearly, and for all the stuff that the Lions need to do offensively this offseason, most of it being the line, like, they have to upgrade this defense. They have to upgrade that second edge rusher spot. They have to make sure that they're backfilling Anzalone if they let him go, that they're, you know, investing a little bit. They have to find a way to take this defense to another level. And, you know, going back to a point Colton and I made, like, a senior defensive assistant to kind of give Shep a second set of eyes to backstop him, to inject some, you know, old school thinking, you know, would probably help and go a long way as well.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of, I don't know if it's just my For You page on Twitter, but like a lot of Lions fans saying, man, if we were in the playoffs, man, we could have made a run. And I get that's easy to say. It feels pretty wide open this year, but also you lost to Max Brosmer in 9 twice. So like, I don't know if you can really say that after a year like that. Obviously you got some things to clean up and maybe you make a run next year, but this year, I don't know if that's in the cards. I don't know if there's anything I watched that's like applicable to the Lions situation, if that's the conversation we're having. I think the Lions could have given the Bears, you know, made that a game. Obviously they beat them twice and beat them in that last game of the season, but yeah, I'm looking around elsewhere. Justin mentioned the Texans. Like, they have, like, 2 studs at defensive end, and that maybe speaks to the edge rusher conversation and why, you know, a lot of people are fed up with it, or, you know, at least a little upset that it was so – there was sort of this dismissive tone all last offseason when it was brought up. But it's really hard to find 2 dudes like that. The Lions have 1 of them that's in that realm, but finding a second one, you either have to pay up or, you know, trade a bunch of assets, like Justin mentioned. The 49ers game, I think maybe that's one where – you know, people can have feel some type of way, because the 49ers are one of the most injured teams in the league, and they still found a way to win against a team that's, you know, coming off the Super Bowl championship, a team that beat the Lions in the regular season. Without some of their best dudes, they were able to come out and win. I think Kyle Shanahan is such a great coach, and what he's able to do, like drawing up those creative plays, the Juwan Jennings pass, like that stuff that, like, if you have that offensive mind, it's such a luxury if he's your head coach. Not to say that Dan is invaluable in different ways, but that's why Kyle Shanahan is 1 of 1 in this league. Elsewhere, I mean, like, you got a superhuman alien like in Josh Allen that's, you know, feel like he's dragging the Bills to these wins. Patriots are a really good team. Drake May's having an MVP season. Stafford was killing in that Rams game. The Panthers, actually, I was really impressed with them for being able to make that close, as close as it was, 34-31 there. So, if we're talking about the Lions situation, I don't know if there's one takeaway where it's like, man, if they had that, or man, if they did that. I just really enjoyed watching the games, man. Most of them were pretty good, except for that Steelers-Texans game.
Bro, we've been blessed with good NFL games and good college games. The college playoff games have been overall pretty damn good. So
once we got out of the first round,
we all worked on things. Yeah, but we all work on Thanksgiving. I just want to express a little thanks for getting some good football the last couple weeks. Thank you.
Yeah, no, definitely. I, you know, watching the game, the NFC games on Saturday, the Rams first and then the Bears second, feel like both were confirmation of what we thought we knew about Matthew Stafford, which is that if you give him the ball back with a chance to win the game and 2 minutes on the clock, he's going to do it. Like, that was maybe the most impressive and least surprising part of the weekend. When he had a chance to go and lead his team to victory there, there was no doubt in my mind that he was going to get it done. I still think the Rams are the biggest threat to win the Super Bowl. And not that Stafford really needs the feather in his cap now, but I continue to marvel at the way he not only has continued to produce, but just continue to stay healthy. Like, this guy is, what, 37, 38 now, and he is still slinging that thing around the field, still probably one of the 3 or 4 livest arms in the NFL. Like, I still really enjoy just watching him zip the ball across the field, and then confirm that the Bears are just an impossible team to make sense of. Like, I thought the data point that kind of captures their season was when the Packers go up 27-16 with that touchdown in the fourth quarter, and their win percentage at that point was 95.5%. And these are the odds the Bears have somehow defied all season long. That was like their 7th or 8th win that it felt like they pulled out of their ass. Like, if I was a Packers fan or even a Packers player. I think we heard their safety, Javon Bullard, say after the game, like, I don't know how we won. Like, they weren't better than us. And it felt like watching that game that they weren't. Like, the Packers, for the most part, were the better team in that game. And then you get into this fourth quarter and Caleb Williams can make, you know, that insane play on fourth and 10 to extend the game. And the defense under Dennis Allen just does enough. And once they start hanging around, you're like, oh my God, they're going to win this freaking game. They're an impossible team to comprehend. Usually they only win those games and they get a flurry of turnovers on defense. That really wasn't even the case. Unless you want to count maybe the missed field goal and the missed extra point as gifts, but a team that defies logic, but with each game they win, obviously the chances rise that they could actually be playing in the Super Bowl in 3 weeks, which is just so hard to fathom. To echo your point, Colton, the 49ers and Kyle Shanahan and Robert Saleh are a marvel. And I think it was Jeff that you said, as we led this conversation off, like, the weekend emphasized the importance of experienced and competent play callers. And the 49ers are the epitome of that. Like, you, if you really wanted to make the case, you could, that they are doing what the Lions would have to do without Aiden Hutchinson, Jack Campbell, Sam Laporta, Jameson Williams, Ricky Pearsall, mind you, is on pace for 1,000-yard season before his injury, brought Jared Goff for basically half of the season. And then I wouldn't go this far, but they did consider Brandon Ayuk their number one receiver. So if you really wanted to hammer home the point, you could say also without Amon-Ra St. Brown. Without St. Brown, J-Mo, Jared Goff for half a year, Sam Laporta now, Jack Campbell, and Aiden Hutchinson, the Lions would be playing for a spot in the NFC Championship. That blows my mind. I think that is a heavier dose of attrition than even they themselves suffered last year. And watching that game on Sunday, I just gained even more respect for Kyle Shanahan calling the plays on offense and Robert Saleh just holding that thing together on defense. Like, Eric Hendricks, who is still in the league and signed with the 49ers, like, what, a week ago or a month ago or something, makes the clinching play in that game on a play that probably was Fred Warner's responsibility when the season began. But all respect in the world to the 49ers for pulling through the way they have.
Did you catch the Stafford in the huddle quote from Davante Adams, Will?
No, what was it?
Dude, they get out there for the 2-minute drive and he just looks at the huddle and like, hey, let's go take their hearts.
It's like, classic, man. I think he said that on his first run with the Rams. He was like, there's nothing better than sucking the soul out of someone. I was like, God damn, this guy's a killer.
Yeah. Adam's like, I ain't ever heard shit like that before in my life. He's like, it fires you up. But like, I'm just curious. Like, I mean, obviously we're semi-neutral here, but like, we got no dog in the race. Like, is there anything you're hoping to see, you're rooting for in these playoffs with the remaining, what is it, 8 teams?
I'm pulling for Josh Allen, man. I want to see him get
a good one.
I really do. Like, I found myself on Sunday emotionally invested in the outcome of that game. When the Jaguars took the lead late in the game, I was like, no, like, it's got to be Josh's year. And then, like, as that ensuing drive for the Bills offense came down to a couple fourth downs, like, I felt a little heart palpitations. Like, I found myself really pulling for Josh Allen. I just love to see all-time players achieve all-time success. And I think, as a fan of this game, it would be a deep shame if someone like Josh Allen never found his way to the mountaintop. And also for a city like Buffalo, that I think has some parallels to a city like Detroit, in that their civic pride, this is true of Detroit and Buffalo, is tied inextricably to its sports teams. Like, compare that to a city like LA or a city like Miami, heck, even a city like New York, where a lot of times your sports teams are diversions, you know, or they're side events. But in cities like Buffalo and Detroit, like, we really depend on them for our sense of self. And so I root for Buffalo to succeed. You know, obviously they were tortured when they lost 4 straight Super Bowls, and I root for Josh Allen as kind of a titan in this game to get what I think he deserves. I said it last year when the Lions got curb stomped by Josh Allen, and I stand by it now. that if we were invaded by aliens and had to play a game of football to defend planet Earth, QB1 for me is Josh Allen. I just think he's such a stud. Maybe this is my new love letter to Josh Allen, but I definitely find myself pulling for him and for the city of Buffalo.
I feel like the coolest matchup remaining would probably be Bills Rams if we're talking like Super Bowl potential matchups. Yeah. I think that'd be awesome for a lot of the reasons you just mentioned with Josh Allen. Stafford, I think winning a second Super Bowl, I don't know if he's going to get MVP. Seems like might be 50-50, maybe leaning more towards Drake May. But in terms of his Hall of Fame candidacy, now a second Super Bowl would really kind of cement that for him. I think he's in regardless, but I know that's a debate. Yeah. A second one is undeniable at that point.
Yeah.
In terms of like cool stories, though, and I know this wouldn't be like a sexy team to make it, but the 49ers, we just mentioned Kyle Shanahan. If they somehow knock off the number one seed, then you get into the NFC Championship game and maybe Fred Warner comes back and they somehow get to the Super Bowl. That'd be so cool with the season they've had. They're sort of the underdogs left in the NFC. Doubt. So I think that it'd be really cool if they can make a run too. But I'm with you. The Bills and Josh Allen winning one without Lamar.
Gotta do it.
Patrick Mahomes to go through. Like, this feels like
Joe Burrow. Like, come on.
Now
man.
Or never. Joe Burrow. Yeah. It's now or never for him, man. So that's where I'm at.
Are you saying asterisk? Is that what I'm hearing?
Hey, he beat all those guys in the regular season, I'm pretty sure.
All right.
So, he's part of the reason they're not here.
No votes for Ben Johnson. Got it. I feel all of what you're saying about Buffalo. NFC, I want Sam Darnold to erase the narratives about that guy. Like, he's gone through it, right? Like, he's the dude crawling through the tunnel of shit in Shawshank Redemption to get out to the other side. And I think, you know, everybody saw you saw the signing in Seattle and you're like, okay, like, whatever, maybe mild upgrade from Geno. And he's been really good this year. And I know he had a lot of picks, but I still contend maybe Seattle's maybe the most complete team in the playoffs, and really finished strong. And I know Darnold completely pooped the bed at the end of last season, both the Detroit season finale, then the Rams playoff game. So I would like to see him get some redemption for the career that he's had, the trials and tribulations. I would love to see a Seattle Buffalo Super Bowl, and I would feel good narratively about either one of those teams winning.
Yeah, I think it's pretty impressive what the Seahawks have done in back-to-back seasons with Geno Smith at quarterback last year and now Sam Darnold. Maybe it brings us to a Jake Peets conversation. I don't know. Did you guys talk at all about Jake Peets as one of the OC candidates before I hopped on?
I think Colton mentioned his name.
So, Justin, there's a guy, to counter your point, just with one example, who does have a very, very diverse background. He was a run game or a running backs coach with the Panthers under, at the time, Joe Brady, who was the Panthers OC, obviously now the Bills OC.
And Matt Rhule.
And Matt Rhule, and could be a head coach, Joe Brady, as soon as next season. Also, Peets has obviously been heavily involved in the passing attacks at numerous stops. I think it's pretty incredible that the Seahawks have had a top 10 passing attack 2 years in a row, at least by overall yardage. And they did it, as I said before, first with Geno Smith and then with Sam Darnold. And the man coordinating the passing attack for both of those seasons was none other than Jake Peets. And, I think, Justin, the same way that you value anyone, as do all of us, who's connected to Kyle Shanahan, I find myself valuing anyone who's connected to Sean McVay. And Peets does have some pretty deep ties to McVay, obviously coached underneath him for a few years with the Rams, and also alongside him or underneath him when McVay was the OC of Washington like 10 years ago. I think Peets is – resume, his background is pretty interesting, like a number of different influences. Even was play caller at LSU for a year. I know it didn't go great, but spent some time under Nick Saban, two different stints at Alabama. So the impact of all those different football minds on a coach like him is intriguing to me for sure. And I think that's someone that represents that diverse background. And you look at the Seahawks passing attack this year, and second in yards per attempt, and maybe even, as notably, they allowed, I think, the fifth fewest sacks. And certainly that's an offensive line stat, but also speaks to the ability of a scheme to protect its quarterback. And that's something that obviously was lacking here this year when Goff has sacked the career high like 38 times. So not to like hijack the conversation with Jake Peets, but I just did.
No, you're good. To piggyback off that, like what I heard about Peets is like, I guess one of his biggest strengths is his ability to, you know, tag schemes through the air and target the weak spots in the defense. Something that obviously the Lions are always looking to do with those in breaking routes with Jared Goff here. But the Seahawks are third, I think, in the NFL right now, or at least in the regular season, explosive pass rate at 16.9%. Obviously, Clint Kubiak taking over this past season. He's done a lot of good stuff there, and I'm sure Pete's learned from him. But as you mentioned, a lot of these guys are either pass game coordinators, quarterback coaches, some of these names on the list. And so you're talking about maybe – I think the biggest question is, what is their offensive identity going to be? And I guess we don't really know that with Pete's, but the fact that his resume is so expansive, as you mentioned, Birchie, years as a scout, coached different positions at the NFL level, has kind of been there and done that with a bunch of different hats that he's worn across his however many years he's coached. But he's intriguing to me. Young guy, 40 years old, still kind of making his mark in this league. When he went to LSU, he came highly recommended from Joe Brady. And as you mentioned, didn't really work out, but I really wouldn't put that on him. That team's kind of a mess down the stretch. He'd be an intriguing candidate for sure. If he ends up getting the job, we'll see.
I don't know why my brain went this way, but like, as I'm looking at Pete's resume and this guy that jumps around from job to job to job to job to job and works for all these great coaches, I'm like, so this guy's John Morton.
John Morton.
What's going on here?
Well, like, he's 40, so he's done all that in a short amount of time.
Yeah, like, I get it. Like, you've worked for Saban and you've worked for all these guys, and but he had 1 year as a coordinator that didn't go great. I think John Morton had 1 year as a coordinator, didn't go all that great either. Like, there's more. It's just, it was weird to me, like, how little I could find in terms of other people praising what Pete's offered from the background. Like, a lot of these coaches, like, you can find quotes from players, from other coaches, like, praising their impact. I just couldn't find much. I think there was one article about Pete's when he was taking over the LSU coordinator job that, you know, really offered any kind of insight and background. But, like, I don't know, like, something about that made me a little wary of his candidacy.
You know who I think is very interesting, and by the way, has the backing, is under McVay, Nate Shielhaus, who's been getting a ton of interviews lately. I don't know if he's going to be a head coach this cycle. He's already taken multiple interviews, but I really hope the Lions interview this man. He's coached pretty much every position. The only negative, though, is he's only been in the NFL for 2 years with the Rams. He was with Iowa State for a while. I know the Lions just reached into Iowa State and picked up their one of their coaches to be their tight end coach for a little bit till he went back. But he's coached in college at least since 2016. Wide receivers, running backs, quarterbacks. He's been a running game coordinator and a passing game coordinator. And then he was the passing coordinator for the Rams this past season, obviously with Puka and Devontae and Matthew Stafford. But Matthew, expectedly, I mean, I think he should win MVP. So he's someone that is rising up very fast. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, Sean McVay said that guy is going to be a head coach. Like, and honestly, I know Sean's always going to advocate for his guys, but to kind of what you said, Justin, like, this guy's going out on a limb. I mean, for Nate Shield. And I watched a video the Rams put out where they did like a whole behind the scenes with Nate Shieldhouse. And it's interesting to see, like, he's the prep guy for all the passing schematics. And he's a very bright dude. So I really hope they bring him in for interview, because if you don't get a coaching gig, you could stay with the Rams, but Sean's going to call plays. You might as well. I mean, if you have an opportunity to go, you know, coach essentially an offense with all this talent, I think it'd be an intriguing guy to kind of bring in. But that's a dude who I think has the passing game experience, coach different positions. It would just be a little bit of a premature hire. He's only coached in the NFL for 2 years, but he's had a lot of success. So that's kind of the Davis Webb example I brought up last week. He's only has 2 years, but a guy that organizations love. So we'll see what happens with Nate Shieldhouse.
I just learned that it's pronounced Shieldhouse, so that's really good for me.
Yeah, takeaway. I had to make sure it was pronounced Shieldhouse. I was like, I'm going to butcher this.
How were you saying it before?
I was saying Shieldhouse.
I don't know.
Yep.
That's kind of badass.
I was pronouncing it as a Rams guy.
Yeah, Shieldhouse just like crushes Steins and Bavarian pretzels.
Sounds way cooler, I might add. I mean, that sounds like a
they called me Shieldhouse on Saturday nights at BC.
that's Kyle Meinke's preferred candidate.
Another McVay guy while we're on the subject. Maybe how do we feel about Zach Robinson, the Falcons OC? Because I know he's available right now, technically. You know, they hired Raheem Morris.
Yep.
He's obviously coached Jared Goff before in LA. Their time overlapped there. Quarterback's coach. I think he's coached receivers too, if I'm not mistaken, or at least assistant wide receivers coach. Did a decent job with the Falcons offense the last couple seasons. You know, good and explosive plays, like the run game stuff with Bijan was pretty solid. Curious if they, I think he might be interviewing for maybe the Bucs job or another job that's out there, no seat vacancy. Curious if the Lions get in the mix there, but I don't think there's been much buzz about him yet.
Bucs so we'll are interviewing everyone, Colton.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Everyone. I think they talked
to Matt's going to look there. I go there. You're in Tampa.
I don't know, man. Yeah, Oklahoma State doesn't say Yale staff, to me.
They're calling them up.
My question is, what's the, like, thing, what's the difference between organizations announcing guys they interview and organizations that don't? Is there like a reason for that, or is it just a preference, or is there like, I kind of like the Bucks are like, hey guys, we just interviewed this dude. Like, I like how they're very upfront about it. That's, I wish the Lions were. I know you get, there's leaks and stuff, but
did the Lions do that with head coach candidates when Campbell was hired?
I think most teams do it with head coach candidates. Yeah. I think seeing it less with coordinators.
Yeah.
Is that like a, that was like Brad says, competitive disadvantage? I don't know. Like, what is that?
Yeah.
Some secrecy. Yeah. The Lions do try to keep things in house. So maybe that's part of it, but I'm not sure.
That was the best part of the Falcons announcing their candidates for president of football when everyone knew they were just hiring Matt Ryan. Like,
created that job.
And then they would be like, have you interviewed Matt Ryan to be Matt Ryan yet?
Hey, look at old Jack says, what's stopping us from interviewing Tanner Akstrand? I mean, he's got a point.
His current title?
We wanted the guy so bad. I mean, you can bring him back. Ended terribly with the Jets. That was terrible. That's a tough first gig, by the way. That's why, like, I think job selection, you got to be very sure in general. So what Ben did, hindsight, I do respect the hell out of it, because he got, even the Lions fans hate it, his ideal job with the number one overall quarterback in the Chicago Bears with a boatload of money. But yeah, no one wants to go to the Jets, man. AG's the only dude.
Moore doesn't want to go for sure. That's why.
Yeah. Good point. He's like, dude, screw that. Make a couple million to come back. Yeah. But there's our we'll do it this week. We kind of did our dog and pony show brewing our pick of the week, offensive coordinator pick of the week. We'll get to the all pro stuff. We can talk more about that next week. But for everyone tuning in, hit the like button on the stream. Subscribe if you haven't already. I think we're like 20 subs away, roughly, I believe, from like 3,000. So we're on our way. So keep showing support. We'll be live next week. Appreciate you all. Enjoy the playoffs. Until then, we'll catch you. Peace.